All right, everybody. All Japan Women Destiny time. AJW classics through the ages. Going through the history of All Japan Women. We're all learning together and we're all watching together. It is classics episode and we're doing a double feature here. 90 and 91 over Wrestling Queendom. 1994, from March 27th, 1994. Not to be confused with the Wrestling Queendom show they just ran about 5 months ago in 93, which was a good show. But regardless, here we are. Sold out show, 16,500 announced. Fully and 100% based on the main event of Akira Hokuto teaming with the big arch rival Shinobu Kandori up against Aja Kong and Bull Nakano. The worlds have collided on this show. Now, what was the rest of the card? Well, it's significantly weaker than the year prior. And the other reason why this show sold out, it is the same time as Dream Slam, the very famous show from the year before, which also sold out. So there's your little context there. We are on the road to the Dome. We are on the road of Akira Hokuto's retirement. In which she has, this is one of three matches she is booked for. So they got to make them count, if you will, as she has taken up residence essentially in Mexico for the time being. And we head on over to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter from April 1994. All Japan Women's Wrestling Queendom 2. Yokohama Arena drew the second largest crowd and gate in the history of Japanese women's wrestling, trailing only last year's Dream Slam 1, which took place on April 2nd in the same building. And although the crowd was announced as a sellout, the real attendance was closer to 15,000. So a little inflation there. Might as well announce a sellout if there's 15,000. I got no problem with that. Ringside tickets were pegged at $285 a pop. So the gate was probably in the 1 million plus range, as the building, when packed at those prices, is scaled at about $1.5 million. And then he goes on and says a number of things about the show and the card, the difference between how the year prior was billed as the anniversary show, 25 years of AJW, and how it was the first of the interpromotional warfare, etc., etc. It was also said in the Observer, and the people that were giving him feedback at the time, that a lot of the work rate on the show was very much not even at the par of their Cork and Hall shows that AJW does on a monthly basis. But there was the conversation to be had, end quote, still, to call it anything but a good show with an excellent main event would be to compare it to the all-out WAC standard the company has set for itself the past 2 years, since it was said to be good, if not better, than the major men's spectaculars. So that's another conversation when coming about something like Stardom in the modern era, where the men's work rate is so unfathomably different than what it was in the 80s and 90s. The women's wrestling has been at this peak performance since the mid to late 80s, you know? And it really ticked up a few boxes the higher we went with Manami Toyotas and Aja Kongs and Akira Hokuto's getting in the ring. But if you look at, like, Stardom, and I'm watching those matches and I'm comparing, I mean, I'm thinking a lot of those matches in Stardom in this modern era are always at least at the effort level of kind of the main events, and obviously worked incredibly more different. But in terms of comparing it to the men's promotions, it's to me, it's more like the men's promotions finally caught up with the work rate of AJW and the women of Stardom when you're comparing it directly. So it's not apples to apples like it was in the 90s. It's more like the men caught up. That's how I take it. And that's really all he had to do, all he had to say. He does have some varying degrees of star ratings. The notable is the 4.5 star rating he gave the main event of Hokuto and Kandori up against Kong and Nakano. And then everything else was kind of around that 3.5 to 4-star range being the Manami Toyota Plum Mariko match. Curiously, I couldn't find a rating on the LCO versus Cutie Suzuki Mayumi Ozaki match. You might hear something I have to say about that match in a little bit. If you haven't taken the time, go on and check out the All Japan Women Destiny feed for just these episodes that are uploaded on there, along with the delayed versions of the Joshi 2010s podcast, which you can get early access over on the Patreon and access to the Google Drive, where all those shows are easily accessible. That is a journey out of the 2010s, out of the dark ages, for Joshi Professional Wrestling. Just did Catch the Wave not too long ago. Did a joint show of called J Ribbon, where it's JWP and Ice Ribbon. And by the time you listen to this show, the Stardom X Stardom show had come out. That is the Yuzuki Aikawa Yoko Bito match in the main event over Nanai Takahashi and Yoshiko. And the Io Shirai match, where she came back and from Mexico for the drug charges, and these charges were dropped. So see what happens to Io Shirai in her first match back in that sense. But enough of the plugs. Let's move on. So this show was more along the lines of what we've seen out of the AJW booking a lot during this interpromotional era. It's JWP against AJW. It's LLPW against AJW. It's never JWP against LLPW, given their history. And then there's your throw-in FMW match. We'll get to that one. So the booking is very consistent at this point, and definitely losing a lot of heat with the audience. Throughout, up and down throughout this show, the matches were worked very, I want to say, house show style to an extent. They might have had a fast, exciting finish, depending on the wrestlers involved for the last few minutes. Very reminiscent to me of the New Japan style in the 90s, where you work fast for the first minute, and then you lock it in, brother, on the mat, and then you'll have a hot finish. Not my style of exciting at all, and there's a lot of matches like that up and down this card. So, the prospect of interpromotional matches has definitely lost its luster in terms of fan reaction. It's lost its luster in seeing a lot of the same people in the same type of matches over and over again. The thing is, they're still drawing good houses, and a lot of that has to do with Akira Hokuto and the Kandori rivalry, along with still Bull Nakano in prominent matches. Occasionally you'll get Chigusa Nagayo popping up here and there. And Aja Kong as champion does have some merit against various opponents, and they keep putting her over strong. You got Manami Toyota doing exciting matches up and down the card wherever she's asked. But as for that, that's everybody. So what did that mean for this card? Well, honestly, you know, there was some damn good matches on this card. There were some damn boring matches on this card. And then there was one that I thought was just pretty good, upper echelon of getting to great, but we'll get there. We begin with an AJW junior title match. It's Kandi Okatsu defeating and defending the title against Rii Tamada, 9 minutes. Fine. Nice little 2.5, 2-star thing. Not much to say there. I'm still waiting for Kandi Okatsu to kind of break out, if you will, of these undercard opener type situations. But she's also got to get up her skill level before she does that, so I'm kind of keeping my eye on her there. Good JWP prospect, if you will. Then the second match on this card put me in shock. Like woke shock, if you will. It is the Little Great Muta, a.k.a. Little Frankie, against Little Abdullah the Butcher, a.k.a. Mr. Buddha Man. 7-minute little person midget match. And if that wasn't, like, shocking enough, because for some reason AJW likes doing these, yes, there was one mimicking the Great Muta, but there was also the one mimicking Abdullah the Butcher. And if you've ever seen Dragon Ball Z and it's, and you see Mr. Popo, where it's like this comically racist black guy figure with the purple lips and all that, that's what Mr. Buddha Man was looking like here when he's trying to do Abdullah the Butcher. He's not just in blackface, He's in black everything. And it's so shocking. I was taken aback. And the match also sucked. So there's, but with the crowd, they're just reacting like it's two people that are in costume. So in the context of 93 and 94, I will not fully cancel this, but boy, oh boy, was it shocking nonetheless. It was like, holy, it was my phrase. I went, zoinks, holy racist Batman. Dud. Japanese tag title match, because at this time, Mickey Honda and Yoshikura and I of LOPW are holding these things. Kaori Ito and Watanabe are trying to get these back for Team AJW. 20 minutes. This went way too long. Kurenai, Ito just do not have that level of work rate. Tomoko is still trying to find like who she even is in the ring. She's trying to do lucha. She's trying to do power. She can't really do both at the same time like she wants to. She's slipping on ropes all the time, getting lost. And look, Kurenai with her kendo stick and her, I'll call it gangster persona. Like, it's entertaining, but it's not 20 minutes entertaining. If it wasn't Mickey Honda trying to German suplex some fools, this was also dangerously close to a dud. But Kurenai and Honda retain. There was weird moments in this match where the crowd would only react to the AJW wrestlers when they'd no-sell Honda or Kurenai. And then I guess they were always getting the sense of someone's going to shoot on somebody at some point. But I don't know. This was incredibly disappointing, and the tag titles stay on Honda and Kurenai. Okay. So, we move on. It's Hikari Fukuoka against Chaprita Asari. 14 and a half minutes. And, you know, when you see these two names on paper and you go, oh, shit, okay. But then you got to remember it's 1994. We're not in 1997, where even though the industry's tanking, these two wrestlers are significantly better by that time. Asari is still kind of in, I'll call it rookie mode, if you will. She's got the inflatable tubes on her hips and arms, like she's about to go swimming in the lake. And right now the story with Asari is she's very athletic, but if she misses any of her key moves, like she did on the last show, where she basically did her sky twister and landed on her fucking head and neck, where she's a crash and burn and then pin her. Well, Asari hits some drop kicks. She has some offense for the first minute. And then it's Hikari Fukuoka hitting the mat like it's Keiji Muto in the middle of the ring in 95. It is so incredibly boring because, you know, when you want to see a Chaprita Asari match, you can't wait to see her get into a sleeper hold on the mat. And this is one of my biggest criticisms of Hikari Fukuoka. She has all the skills and the high flying of Manami Toyota. And she's got a little bit more pizzazz to her other than the high flying. But in terms of putting it together in the ring, this is what we end up with a little too often. And her placement on the card is she's not really breaking through in JWP other than being put in like interesting matches like this. But then when she puts on a stinker along these lines, it's not very exciting. The finish is Asari goes for her sky twister and crashes and burns. She does not land on her neck this time, just her face. And Fukuoka makes short work with her by hitting a move and pinning her. This was disappointing to me. So we got our FMW offer match. It's Kudo and Nurse Nakamura. She's in her nurse gear. She's not bad nurse yet. The more interesting version. And she's against Suzuka Minami, you know, mid-card role, trying to make Chikako Shiratori look something a little better than a rookie. So they're trying to get Chikako Shiratori a little bit more time. This match goes 16 and a half minutes. Good God, this was long, too. Kudo can work. Nakamura, she's getting better. Minami, she's a lock-and-hold person like Fukuoka all too often. But the real MVP was actually Chikako Shiratori, going full effort the entire time, so at least she was good in this match. And by the way, I haven't given anything really above like 2.5 stars on the show so far. And this match was no exception, because when we get to the end, it is a bizarre finish where Kudo has Shiratori in a stretch plum. Okay? A little dragon sleeper variation. And Nakamura is holding back Minami, and then as Minami kicks Kudo in the face, the ref calls for the bell. and it's super confusing. No one knows what's happened. They tried to get a couple near-fall finishes before that, and it just seemed like the match was going to get over, and then it ends in a wet fart, just confusing thing where it's like, well, I guess they submitted before the bell, and it's a ref controversy. And, you know, this tends to happen with a lot of these FMW matches. It's almost like a certain guy who runs FMW might has something to say with some of these finishes every now and again. My light bulb and tinfoil hat is gleaming. So then we get a match that I was looking forward to. It's Manami Toyota defending the IWA title against Plum Mariko. Went 21 minutes. And this has been said to be Plum Mariko's best ever singles match. Now, I would argue, if you haven't seen it yet, go check out Plum Mariko against Chigusa Nagayo. I think it took place at Korakuen Hall. And I think that has the edge over this one, because unfortunately, around this time, this is when Plum Mariko was starting to get concussions, and if there wasn't someone to kind of guide her specifically into various spots, much like Manami Toyota did in this match, she tends to get lost a little bit and forgets, well, where she's at, unfortunately. And you know, there's a number of Plum Mariko retrospectives on there, and this match is always on that list. And you can kind, unfortunately, I've read that people could see some signs of issues with Plum in 1994. Maybe not particularly in this match, because Toyota was always sure to place Plum in certain positions so she can do some of her high flying moves, and then set up Plum where all she has to do is kind of jump off something. And the match had a lot of ups and downs in terms of excitement and lull periods. So I think that's where the match kind of loses people. It's like almost on the cusp of that 3 out of 3, maybe even a 4-star match, but it's more along the lines of a 3.5, you know, 3 3/4 area, I would say, if we're putting a rating on it. Toyota does end up winning with the JOC, and I do still recommend this match. I think it's worth checking out, especially if you want to check out Queendom here 94 and do some pick and choosing. Pretty much every match except the semi-main from here on out, I would easily recommend. I would not recommend the semi-main. We'll get to that. And now we have a kind of sleeper match of the show. It's Eagle Sawai and Reggie Bennett. Oh, boys, she's back. Okay. They're taking on Takako Inoue and Yumika Hota. Reggie Bennett, we haven't seen her on any sort of journey since the LLPW opener that I did on the Patreon, and it's actually available for free on the YouTube channel front page if you want to go check out and listen to that show. The almost LLPW Minnesota territory promotion that was going to try to kickstart LLPW with some buzz and talent influx that ended up never being. That was episode 1. But Reggie Bennett, she's here. She's strong. She's not a construction worker. There's another reference to that show. She's not a construction worker in DWP at this point, but she looks like a Canadian farmer. We'll put it that way. And her and Eagle Sawai, you know what? They're a perfect team. They're both big. They're both strong. They're both beautiful. And they're here to kick ass. And poor Takako Inoue took the brunt of all of this, including the finish. But first, Yumika Hota, she did excellent in this match. I'm usually ragging on her, usually don't like her, but boy, did I really get an enjoyment of Yumika Hota coming in, kicking Bennett and Sawai as hard as she could to save Takako from inevitable doom. It's 13 minutes. It's a great time frame for a match like this. And the finish was, I loved it, where it's Sawai and Hota just going at each other like big bulls. And Bennett just gets Takako in a fucking torture rack Lex Luger style. And all that was missing was a flailing arm from Takako, as I think it was Daichi in this match ref, and calls for the bell. Recommend this, 2 out of 3. Go check that out. JWP tag titles on the line. So yes, usually we have the AJW tag titles, or as in the main ones, But here on this show, it's the JWP tag titles for a change. And the champions are Cutie Suzuki and Mayumi Ozaki. What a tandem that is. The rivalry of good idol versus dark idol, if you will. Both are very much presented for their looks. But Mayumi Ozaki leans more into the heel end. And her strides that she made in 93 are carrying over well into 94. And she just continues to make massive steps forwards in her career. So I would say 1993 was definitely the kickstart of the career of Mayumi Ozaki. And Cutie Suzuki, she's hanging in there. And here we have probably the most interesting kind of push in 1994 going on right now, and that's LCO. That's the tag team of Mima Shimoda and Etsuko Mita. Mita's got her Death Valley Driver in full locked and loaded mode. Mima Shimoda has a heavy mean streak, and you know she's getting more and more tough-looking as the months go by. Very noticeable. Because I've been keeping a close eye on him since January when Hokuto is no longer full-time in this promotion. And LCO was immediately put into a spotlight for main events. And putting on matches like this, holy shit, this is one of my favorite matches 94 so far. LCO wins against Cutie Suzuki and Mayumi Ozaki. And it went 20 minutes and 35 seconds. I've seen various reports from other people that have reviewed this match. It's to them, it's like 4 3/4. I think it's easily 4.5. I think this is just super high octane energy, very exciting. And I actually found my go-to guy here, Scott's Blog of Doom here, where he has kind of a nice little setup here for how he introduces this match. So I'm just going to read this verbatim, quote unquote. Cutie and Mayumi were both given pretty girl pushes, photo shoots and whatnot, but were also treated like serious wrestlers. Ozaki is like an itty-bitty Manami Toyota, still using generic Joshi offense at 5 feet nothing. Cutie is about third tier in the company with credibility, but few huge wins. Cutie is wearing a black leotard with white lining and no back, while Ozaki is wearing a bright pink leotard with green ruffles. Quite the color combination, Ozaki. LCO are being cruel, nasty women folk to everyone in Joshi around this time. I agree. That is very noticeable, too. Ozaki's definitely leaning more heel these days. That's my words. Slowly climbing up the card, they're wearing gold variants of their standard costumes. This time, Etsuko Mita is wearing a two-piece made of shiny gold, while Mima Shimoda is wearing her standard black two-piece with gold tassels over it. So, yeah, very standard for Mima Shimoda. Look, I could go over every move they did in this entire match. I'm not going to do that. There's excellent tag wrestling, excellent combinations. There's people on other shoulders. They're doing doomsday devices with drop kicks and shit. They're doing planches to the outside. There's a small lull period, very brief, that the crowd's like catching their breath in a way. They're doing assisted planches. I mean, from start to finish, this was... I mean, they both try some heel work at times because of just the size difference was also real cool. And then what was the finish? I think it was, let's see here. Let's go to Scott Blog of Doom again. He goes, dragon suplex, but flying knee misses. Mita's in and they start rolling each other up repeatedly. Mita takes a friggin' doomsday device. There it is. 4-2, dragon suplex only gets barely tripped up by Shimoda. So a frustrated Cutie climbs up to finish, but jumps right into Mita's shoulders, and she gets hit with the Death Valley Driver. Shimoda grabs Ozaki, allowing Mita to hit another DVD, and holds on to Cutie Suzuki for the pin. Excellent, excellent match. I love the shit out of this. I think it's the best match on the show. Yes, I do think it's better than the main event. It was a solid 20 minutes. I was never bored during it. I bought all the near falls. I just thought this was the best energy match through the show, and I was the most invested. The post-match is also phenomenal, where it's the cool thing to do for AJW wrestlers to shit on the president of JWP. Probably not a good look for this guy after a while, but here we are. The LCO are awarded the JWP tag titles, and Shimoda gets on the mic and just talks absolute shit and talking down to the JWP president, rips on him. And the JWP president responds with tossing the trophy at them and then leaves. Doesn't, like, do any picture, doesn't hand to them. Love that shit. Need more of that in my women's wrestling. So, yeah. Excellent match. Highly recommend. One of the best matches of 94 so far. Dynamite Kansai and Saki Asagawa in 16 and a half minutes. It's your JWP ace, if you will, against the up-and-coming Saki Asagawa. This is kind of like the opposite of the Toyota Plum Mariko match, where this time you had a high-end JWP wrestler against a low-end up-and-coming AJW wrestler. And it kind of played out very much the same way. I have a lot of the same thoughts, other than Saki Asagawa, I think, looks better than Plum Mariko at this point in time. I think Asagawa should be pushed. They're certainly putting her in more prominent positions now, but she's still losing. And that's an issue. She's not in the main event. She's not being pushed quite there. She's kind of in these like third, fourth, and the top matches, where that's good, but she does need to win every now and again, and we just haven't seen enough of that. But regardless, like, I'm just not that into Dynamite Kansai outside of a few matches. She's very slow. She's very much like Yumika Hota in a lot of ways. She has some cooler moves, I'll give her that, but they both have cool-ass finishes. The difference is just like the Toyota match, you kind of knew who was going to win. Not necessarily a bad thing if they put on a good enough match, but for Kansai and Hasegawa, I think this was acceptable. It's like a 3.5-star match. If Oka Stinker, third from the bottom there, she does this as well. You look up old Weekly Pro, Shoe Pro, and those kind of things. A lot of people anticipated that this match was going to possibly steal the show while the main event drew the house. Okay? Boy, was that just not the that was the total opposite. This actually brought everything down. This Yamada Kyoko Inoue match was incredibly boring and a weird ass finish too. They begin hot for like 60 seconds, and then it's Kyoko Inoue, lock it in, brother. Rest on the mat like it's an Andre the Giant big stud match where people are falling asleep in the middle of a hold. And it's essentially 15 of the 16 minutes are kind of like that, with the occasional big move, and it was sloppy as shit. You had Yamada trying kicks and missing. You had Kyoko kind of slipping around, signaling for the Niagara Driver, and then just never hitting it. Not good. This was not good. There's like one fighting spirit spot near the end, and they really tried to oversell the kind of exhaustion factor. And Kyoko, what happens is Kyoko hits a lariat, hits the Niagara Driver, but she's too beaten to like cover Yamada. And so Yamada kicks out. And then instead of like the NXT shock face pose, Kyoko goes, ah, shit. And then just immediately locks in this, like, eye-raking STF, and Yamada just taps out. And it's over like that. Why doesn't Kyoko just do that, you know, more often? So Yamada had this belt for about 5 months. Kind of on par for the All-Pacific title, to be honest, if it's not Chigusa Nagayo holding the thing. I just thought this was incredibly boring. Just a lot of holds, and then they hit like three big moves a pop, and then it's just over out of nowhere. Did not enjoy this. I think that hurt it a lot. Like 2 stars, 2.75 tops area. Just not great. Just not great at all. And the crowd, it took a long time for the crowd to kind of recover after that. But not until, like, they were, okay, let me put that in a different way. When the bell rings, the crowd like sits on their hands. But boy oh boy, when we get to this main event and it's Bull Nakano and Aja Khan coming out, and then Akira Hokuto comes out, compared her to Kandori, Nakano, and Kong, it's night and day. Hokuto is just on another level of star compared to everybody else. Bull Nakano still has cred, Kandori has a lot of cred, and Kong, she needs to get over in certain ways, and she's getting there. We haven't fully seen what Aja Kong is and will be yet, but you see the flashes. You see the flashes of her personality. She's still very stoic in a lot of ways, but there's a moment in the match where Kong does the whole running jog and mocks Kandori. That gets a big pop out of the crowd. Shit like that. So they announce everybody. It's a crazy matchup. For the first 20 minutes of this 35-minute match, it's a can they coexist storyline. Okay? Hokuto and Kandori are not tagging each other in. Kandori starts the match off and just simply refuses to have Hokuto tag in until Hokuto slaps her in the face. And the ref says that's a tag. And they kind of exchange that a few more times while it's a lot of Kong and Nakano getting the heat on both these people, which is interesting. Or they fight them off and they do something like that. It's interesting. It's we used to hate each other. We're rivals, but we respect each other, but we're not going to get along yet. Was not played out in 1994. I'll put it that way. It was very fresh and new. There's a lot of instances of brawling outside, very quickly and shortly. I mean, I forgot to mention this in the Reggie Bennett Hota match, but when there's a time where they go to the table, and Bennett is going to give Hota a powerbomb as they stand on the table, and the legs go out during the powerbomb, and Hota's like head and like lower back go into the angle of the dropped end of the table, and it's like terrifying. Well, in this match, the table also does not break ever. With multiple instances of pile drivers and suplexes on various tables, and Kandori and Hokuto and company ramming Kong and Nakano into the like silvery futuristic gateway that they have for an entrance. There's a funny instance of Kong and Hokuto going to the commentator's table instead of one on the other side, and the mics are all fumbling around, commentary's gone. Kong is throwing guardrails at people without regard for their safety, even though there's fans around. So the brawling sequences were actually pretty exciting and good. They were much like the mid-80s to me. It got some heat. There was a lot of moments within that first 20, though, where they weren't brawling outside, where it was just a lot of the occasional tag move, clothesline type situation, doing some tandem elbow drop, leg drop combinations. Lock it in, work the leg. It's definitely a stalling for time type journey, and it's up to them to try to make it more interesting. And in the context of 94 and what Hokuto means and the story being told, you can tell the crowd was into it at the time for sure. And there's a reason for that. Absolutely. It's four of the biggest women stars right now in the industry, bar none. I don't think anyone is close at this time. Maybe you can replace Manami Toyota with Aja Kong, but Kong's the champion, not Toyota. So that's kind of my argument there. And then we get to that last 15 minutes where it is just straight up near fall, near fall, near fall forever. For 15 minutes of near falls, and the crowd's stomping, the crowd's getting into it. Every single sequence is edge of your seat exciting. So the journey to that point and how much actual time there was of interesting wrestling makes this match kind of added to the all-time great list in that instance. Do I think it's better than the two Hokuto Kandori matches? I don't. Do I think it's better than some of the other matches, especially on the singles spectrum? Tag spectrum? I don't know. I mean, I you heard me earlier. I like that LCO Ozaki Cutie Suzuki match more. But it's hard to deny the heat and excitement of the last 15 minutes of this match, especially the last 10 and 5. You know, it was like three tiers of escalation there until you finally get to Hokuto doing two Northern Lights bombs on Aja Kong to finish this matchup. Great close near falls of Kandori, having both Bull Nakano and Kong and sleeper holds and arm bars that the crowd really bought into. And then that told the story at the end. Hokuto has pinned the champion, a rare pin for against Aja Kong. They made one. They made one of these retirement road matches for Hokuto count a hell of a lot by pinning the champion, and they're telling the story that Hokuto has never won the top title in the company, and she's on her retirement, and this is her last run, baby. and there's only one place they can do this at, and that's the Dome. And that's where we're leading to. There you go. Big slugfest, big time match that drew the house. What's not to like about this, besides maybe the journey took a little too long to get going for that 20 of the 35 minutes. This is a heavy recommendation match. Full three from me. I'm probably around that 4.25 range, 4 stars, if I'm being grumpy about it all. Because let me put it this way. If I was in the context of 94, like if I was there, I'd probably, you know, have this match like one big day where it's like 4.5 minimum. For sure. For sure. I don't deny that. But I'm watching it. I do have the context of the era. I have the context of the wrestlers. But unfortunately, I have the context of 2023 eyes. That's what brings this match down, unfortunately. It's probably also why I like the LCO match more on this card. So, excellent show with some duds. Some up and downs for sure. But, you know, when I get two excellent matches on this card, and then two matches that I'm pretty high on, even though it may sound like I'm on the low end of that Kansai Hasegawa match and the Plum Mariko Toyota match, I think those two matches had good places on the card and good purpose. But I think the sleeper match is actually the Sawai Bennett against Takako Inoue Yumiko Hota. I got a lot of enjoyment out of that one. And the big dud was probably everything underneath Plum Mariko and Manami Toyota, and the Yamada Kyoko Inoue match, I think, was just a bore fest. And that'll do it for this show. The classics for the next episode doesn't have anything until June of 94. So I'm going to try to see if I can find like a TV show or something for a quick episode that I can mark that down as Classic 92. And then we can move on to Classic 93 and get into kind of, I guess it would be the Japan Grand Prix of this very year. And that'll do it for this episode of All Japan Women Destiny and this retro section of the podcast.